Hello and welcome to a collaboration with the Rambling Runner podcast and the Road to the Trials podcast, both hosted by me, Matt Chittam, and today I'm joined by Stephanie Flippin and Peter Bromka, two people who are no strangers to the Road to the Trials journey. And today we are going to be announcing, this is an announcement episode for season three of Road to the Trials. We are going to be following these amazing eight people for 365 days, February 3rd to February 3rd of 2024. I cannot wait for this. And for this announcement, two people that I love dearly who become very good friends of mine, again, who are no strangers to this journey, Stephanie Flippin, who was on season one of this podcast, and Peter Bromka, who has lived his Road to the Trials journey very much in a public setting as well. First of all, Stephanie, thank you for coming back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Matt.
And Peter, thank you for joining us as well.
Happy to be here again. Yeah, I crashed. I feel like I crashed your party the first time, so I'm happy to be invited back for season three.
So many offline jokes I could share right now that we said before this podcast started, but we're going to keep those offline. Well, this is going to be so much fun. I can't wait for this, but let me first just say, before we dive into all of it, okay, this is season three of Road to the Trials. For season one, we followed marathoners getting ready for the 2020 marathon trials in Atlanta, which we had eight people as well. We followed people for about, I think, 6 to 8 months, Stephanie, was basically what we did for that one. And then, again, because of all the COVID stuff, the track trials got pushed back a year. So unlike this coming cycle, there was a extended break between the Olympic trials for the marathon and the Olympic trials for the track. So then the following spring, we had an abbreviated season, season two, following six people on the track. And here we are, season three. We're going to blow it out a full year. We have five amazing women and three amazing men that we are going to follow, which is going to be very exciting. Stephanie, when you think back to getting ready for the 2020 trials, and again, for letting people into your journey every step along the way, and this was, we should say, before you were a pro runner. This was at a very different stage in your life. What are some of the things that you reflect on during that time?
For me, like you just mentioned, it was a totally different time in my life. Actually, Matt, I credit a lot of that journey, though, to where I am today and just kind of helping build my confidence in myself, like throughout my my current professional career. I won't lie, it was, it was a challenge, that I kind of had to work through, putting my goals very out there publicly, and kind of having my training magnified to the public. But I took a lot of valuable lessons from it. It was a wonderful experience, especially getting to connect with the other people that you had on season one. And I felt like I learned a lot about myself in terms of where I really wanted to go with my running career. And I'm not sure that I would be where I am right now without having gone through that total process. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and when you were on for season one, you were the kind of the outlier of the group, right? We had seven people on who had already qualified for the trials. Several of them were, if not odds-on favorites to make the team, very close to it, in a matter of speaking. And we're with you, you were in the situation where getting to the trials was the goal. So the podium at the trials wasn't the goal. It was just getting to Atlanta, and Peter was living that same journey from afar with all of his writing on the topic. Yeah. That was one of the things that was so exciting for people following that season, because a lot of people came over from the Rambling Runner podcast to listen to it, and living that dedicated amateur lifestyle, saw themselves in you in a very real way. And even then, it wasn't like you were knocking on the door of 245. You were 12 to 15 minutes away from it at that point. And it was, I think people really were excited to see, all right, this is no guarantee that she's going to make it. This is going to be a stretch goal, and let's kind of follow along.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of merit in that too. Of course, if I were to go back in time and examine myself 2018, 2019, of course I had a very long way to go, especially in terms of just developing maturity, mental fitness, emotional fitness. But at the same time, I think I don't have any regrets about and I'm sure Peter can attest to that too. I never regret putting big, scary goals out there. Especially for me as a coach, I think it sets a really good example for others to not be afraid to reach higher and higher. If we have a carrot dangling in front of our face that's too low, it's you're kind of always self-limiting yourself. If you're always setting goals that you know are, you know, relatively speaking, like attainable. I have no regrets about putting myself out there. I think it does take a lot of confidence in your own journey, though, and understanding that, like, hey, this might not happen. Hey, there might be others out there listening or watching that maybe think that, like, you know, objectively, like, this doesn't make any sense, you know. And that can be tough. It really can. And that's a process that I still work through every day, just because I don't have that kind of stereotypical, not stereotypical, but that traditional, like, high school collegiate pedigree. I don't have that. So it's something where, like I said, I continually have to work through that process.
Yeah. And I feel like by the end of that season, it felt like just beginning to know you even better. And I think people who listen to this show could probably sense it as well, that there was kind of a change that had happened for you, especially in like the second half of that season, where I think you started to really come to grips with, like, hey, maybe my future here as a runner is not on the roads. And fast forward, like, you end up becoming like a professional trail runner, like, not long thereafter.
Yeah. You know, when you embark on a journey, it's like you're working towards this goal. That's like what you see like happening and kind of like coming to fruition. But yeah, you're so right. Kind of the opposite happened for me. I was like, oh, wait, like, you know, and then of course, like 2020 unfolded the way it did with the pandemic. But for me, it was like, huh, like maybe I really actually do love this 100-mile distance thing. But yeah, I credit so much of that season too to developing myself as an athlete. I would not be where I am today, especially just in terms of developing that speed too. Really beneficial for me.
And Peter, when you think back on the 12 months that preceded Atlanta and how much time that you had spent kind of leading into that, when you reflect back and specifically on, you know, 2019 and the beginning of 2020, besides just like certain races or certain race results, what first comes to mind for you just about that 12-month period?
That guy was crazy. That's what comes to mind as I look back and I'm like, that guy was nuts. I was just like full on leaning out, living. I just feel like the guy in the storm just like leaning over the balcony like, this is totally fine. Everything is fine. Like, I was just training as hard as I could. I was so locked in. I feel like I've written about that process, but it's fun as time has passed, both that I documented it publicly on Instagram and that I've documented it in essays, because even looking back at the essays I wrote a year later, it's been 3 years since then, and I'm able to be like, whoa, easy. And so, I mean, I have like a little bit of weekly mental, you know, gymnastics with myself of like, how do I get back to that level? Am I beyond that, sort of beyond that moment in my life? Because I really enjoy so many elements of it. I could talk for an hour about all the nuance and I write all about it, but I'm like, wow, that guy was all in. And there was reason to be all in, because of like all the steps up the ladder were like, they were clicking, you know, click, 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 click. And so when it is like that, you're sort of like, well, yeah, I'm just going to keep climbing this mountain. Like, what do you mean? We're not going back and we're not pausing. We're just going to keep ascending, which is, I've also come to realize, is like super fortunate. You know, it's it takes... And I'm sure some of the people you're going to reveal for this season like have been through ups and downs, and it's a totally different way to enter a journey like this if you are coming off of a total smash hit versus an injury versus a series of injuries. So like I had been fortunate to really be like, yep, I'm on this and we're just going to keep going. Whereas it's become... I'm not going to claim that like I started it, but it's become like a bit of a thing to start to say like, I'm going for it. I'm going to go for the trials. And I think it's really cool. And a lot of, obviously so many women qualified that inspired like, you know, 10X of their friends. And so I guess what I would say is like, there is absolutely a value in people declaring these audacious goals. At times I have started to want, my mind goes to like wanting to hear a little bit more about like their next steps. You know, it's like, I'm going to climb Everest. And you're like, cool. Like, when are you thinking of buying a ticket to get over to Asia? You know, it's like, don't have a plan for that. And you're like, okay.
I got my vacation time. Is that counting?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I think I bought an ice axe. And you're like, okay. I mean, that's not nothing. Because I was, again, I was like a crazy person about all the details and all these things and all the what it meant. Or I've had friends, you know, I'm really not here to, people can approach it from different ways. People are like, I'm going to race 6 marathons this year. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's a way to approach it. And that could work for some people. I knew that couldn't work for me. But that's what makes it fun. And I guess what I would say is like, cool, if you're in for this, that's awesome. But like, be in for this for a while, because that makes it more interesting, more fun, and more likely to succeed than the like, you see some people be like, I'm all in. And then, you know, 2 months later, they're like, I think I'm doing a track season because I think I'm more in track. And you're like, a track season can help your marathon. But like, did you just change? Okay. Anyways, it's a whole thing. So I'm excited for, yeah, this, we're 12 months out. I think it's fun to look back and then be like, whoa, that sort of COVID time warp. I'm like, we're already here. In the final 12 months, like these next 12 months are going to be nuts.
They are definitely going to be nuts. That is going to be so true. And that was kind of like my thinking was like, all right, how long do I want to follow these people if they're willing to be followed? And that's when I was like, all right, you know what? Especially because as people will hear, half of the people that we're going to reveal have qualified for the trials and are legitimate contenders to be on the podium. That's for sure. And then the other 4 people are in a unique situation, kind of like Stephanie's, in terms of like, hey, getting to the trials is a big step for them. But also some of these people are not merely trying to get to the trials, right? They want to get to the trials and then do something big there as well. So I think we're going to have a pretty wide swath of people. And the goal for this, and I told every single person who was going to be on the show the same thing, and I don't know, Stephanie, if we had the same conversation 4 years ago, and but was it 4 years ago? My gosh, God, my mind is playing tricks on me. I want to get as diverse a group of people as possible for this. And when I say as diverse a group of people, I mean that in every sense of the word. Right? Mm-hmm. Not just merely in the sense that their mind first goes to, but also like from an age perspective, from a background perspective, from a running experience perspective, like their path to even get to the trials perspective, as we'll hear from a couple different people here. I want to have as many different kinds of stories here as possible, because I just think that's more interesting. And personally, I like it better. So it's my show. This is what I want to do. But I think it's also more interesting for the people listening and following along to have this such different paths all to Orlando on February 3rd. And I think hopefully that's the sense that people get.
And I'm excited for a year out. You'll be touching base with people and you can hear their different strategies of how they're going to approach the next year. If you started, say, in August, I think it can get a little weird. You're like, well, I'm really focused on the trials and like you just get
in. We're all doing a fall marathon and we're all going to get ready for the trials. Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of go, okay. Versus, there might be different approaches or, I mean, you end up with the like, how late in the fall can you do a marathon before it starts to eat into your February prep? I mean, it's basically a January marathon, you know? So you go, you can just enter this sort of quiet zone where it's like, everyone's just preparing versus people have to do things and they got to try, like, and the confidence is going to go up and down in the next 6 months.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I'm not going to tease the people anymore. I'll bring up the people's name, do a quick little while. We'll have some fun little conversations about everybody. Again, this isn't like a full preview episode, but we're going to dissect every person's chances of making the trials. No, we're going to talk about fun little things about the people, just introduce them to you, and then over the next 4 weeks, each person's going to have a full intro episode where you'll get to know them even more. There are going to be certain people on here that you probably know very well, other people that you probably don't know very well at all, and the intro episodes will kind of reflect that. So we'll get into those as well, but this isn't going to be a full download on every single person, just a little teaser, a little fun little episode. And at the end, we can just also just talk about the journey, some things to expect from this kind of show, and if we can just kind of banter about different things like, hey, like... Houston's not going to matter this time, right? Like last year was like Peter and so many other people were at Houston. Like not going to be in the cards this year, right? And it's going to be just a changing calendar and things like that. So we can touch on that stuff at the end. So the names of the people. So this time in the past we've had equal number men and women. This time we don't. We have 5 women, 3 guys. This year the women are Nell Rojas, Sarah Vaughn, Danny Moreno, yes. Carmen Graves, and Jeremy Rivera. On the men's side, we have CJ Albertson, Nico Montañez, and Ramiro Guillen, otherwise known, I have to say that, I'll say that the rest of the time. It's kind of like introducing Mike Coe, otherwise known as Kafuzi. Yeah. We have Ramiro Guillen, also known as DJ Curly. So I said before, we have four people who have already qualified for the trials. These are household names in the running community. People who are listening to this probably know all of these people between very well and pretty well. That is Nell Rojas and Sarah Vaughn on the women's side. On the men's side, we have CJ Albertson and Nico Montañez. Nell Rojas and CJ probably don't need any introduction to the vast majority of people who are listening to this. Nell Rojas is easily one of the top 10 women's runners in America, an extremely strong athlete whose Wikipedia page still says she's a professional triathlete. In case you're wondering, how versatile is Nell Rojas? We need to update that. Dear Internet, please update Nell Rojas. Sarah Vaughn on Wikipedia is referred to as a middle distance runner. Well, not during this cycle, she isn't. She's certainly an accomplished track athlete who has been one of the best in America for a long time at a variety of distances, going all the way from middle distance all the way up to the 5K. She debuted at CIM a little over a year ago, went sub 230 in that race, and then ran even faster this year at Chicago. She is absolutely, just like Nell, going to be a contender for the top three. And she is a full-time real estate agent and a mom whose daughter, who is blazing fast as a high school student as well, which is going to be an interesting topic to discuss as we follow Sarah this year. On the men's side, CJ Albertson, the most interesting man in running? I would say so. This guy is seemingly willing to do and try anything. He has the indoor marathon world record and the outdoor 50K world record. Quite a combination. Ultra runner / indoor marathoner. Don't see that very often. Also, people might remember CJ taking it out hot at last year's U.S. Olympic trials, going right from the gun, which has kind of been something that he has done in numerous races. Nico Montañez ran sub 210, getting just under 210 at Chicago this year. He is also has won the 15K championship down at Gate River Run. He also finished third at the USATF Half Marathon Championships in 2021. Not only did he finish third, sometimes those USATF championships aren't the best when it comes to fields. This one, that was not the case. Let me just read you the top 10 in that race. It was Connor Mance, Sam Chalenga, then Nico Montañez, then Clayton Young, then Footsom, then Augustus Mayo, then Leonard Carrier, then Morgan Pearson, then Frank Lara. To say the least, that was a stacked group, and Nico was right up there running a 101 on the road in the half. Nice. Those four people are absolutely going to be in contention for the top three, at least barring any kind of major setbacks or injury. That is for sure. And then we have the second group where they have not qualified for trials, and these people are wildly different from each other. Talk about differences. We'll start with the men this time. And we got Ramiro Guillen, DJ Curly, someone, Peter, that you know well. He was in your neck of the woods of the marathon. He just squeaked in under the marathon trials last year. He ran 2:17 mid, and obviously that is an incredible time.
That was back when it was 2:19.
2:19.
He got in by a minute and a half. He's a good runner.
I was just trying to be nice to you, Peter. I was trying to loop you into this group.
He's a great runner.
He certainly is. And he's a master's runner now. So that's going to be an interesting thing. He actually also, his wife, who Stephanie coaches, who's been on the podcast many times, Melissa Guillen, is an expectant mother as well. So not only is he going to be qualifying for the trials again, he's got a baby on the way. This is going to be exciting. As a master's runner, baby on the way, and trying to qualify for the trials. And
there'll be some stories.
The fastest DJ you know, which is his tagline, which is absolutely great. On the women's side, again, we're just doing a quick hitters here. We'll dive into them in a second. We have Danny Moreno, who, when we talk about U.S. road running fame, is not the most well-known person on this list. But if you were to put this roster of eight people in front of an international running crowd, Danny Moreno might be number one in terms of popularity because of her work on the trails and the Golden World Trail Series, where she has been absolutely phenomenal trail runner. And here she is, announced that she wants to qualify for the Olympic trials and the marathon. Stephanie, I don't think she's run a marathon on trails. I don't think she's run a road marathon. I could she not find not, the time.
No, this will be her debut road marathon. Gosh, she is such a strong athlete. She is probably my favorite, like in terms of like debut. And she'll also be I think she's also racing Boston.
She sure is.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. She's definitely my favorite out of the Boston field.
She will be laughing
year.
At Heartbreak Hill. She'll be like, I run OCC, yeah. Heartbreak Hill.
Yeah.
What is this? I run the UTMB marathon. This is nothing. Mm-hmm. So that will be really exciting. So Dan Marino is one of the, so she ran UCSB, UC yes. Santa Barbara. And then has been in the trails basically ever since. Fun fact, her and DJ Curly had the same coach.
Yes. Mm.
That's how they got to know each other. Even though they've had wildly divergent running careers, actually had the same coach. We have her back to the track, like we said, with Sarah Vaughn. Carmen Graves, steeplechaser by trade, but also, you know, jump into a 5K, has like that semi-pro feel as a runner. So she works full time, but then is qualified for the trials twice in the steeple. And she is hoping to qualify for the Olympic marathon trials through the half marathon. So everyone Ooh. Knows, and we yeah. should have mentioned this at the beginning, for the men, it's 218 to qualify for the Olympic trials marathon. For the women, it's 237. Last time it was 245. So a significant change on the women's side. For getting in for the half, last time it was 64 for the men. This year, 63. Last time it was 73 for the women. This time it's 72. So Carmen is looking to get a 72-second half marathon, which would be roughly a 5-minute improvement from her half marathon PR. Truth be told, she hasn't run a lot of half marathons, so that PR is kind of
soft.
It basically is irrelevant for all intents and purposes, but it will be a robust half marathon time. That is for sure. So it'll be fun to follow along with her. If you've never seen or heard of Carmen Graves, I will say you have probably seen her because she is one of the faces of Tracksmith. So if you've seen a Tracksmith ad in the last 18 months, you probably have seen Carmen Graves in one, if not in all of them at this point. And then the last person that we're going to follow is Jeremy Rivera. Jeremy has been on the Rambling Runner podcast in one of the most popular episodes that we've ever had, frankly. And Jeremy's kind of taking the role similar to the one that Stephanie took in episode in season one, I should say, where Stephanie was trying to getting to the trials was the goal. And certainly that's the case for Carmen and Danny, but they're such high profile athletes, especially Danny, where like once she gets there, she is going to have bigger goals once she gets there. With Jeremy, she has had an incredible journey to this point, because this is someone who 6 years ago was a 4:30 marathoner who has lost, like, in her marathon journey, you know, was like, you know, this, she lost like 60 pounds on the way to just becoming more fit. That was her entree into running, was just like, hey, I want to lose weight, I want to be more active. And now she is just like a stone cold crusher. This woman is one of the most competitive people I've ever met in my life, not just for an amateur athlete, just like any athlete. It is amazing how dedicated and just into her goals she is. Now, she has run a 247 marathon now. Yeah. I should say, this is a former 430 marathoner just a handful of years ago. She is now brought down to 247. She recently ran a 121 half marathon. 121?
120, I think.
120,
I read.
Okay. Yeah, something like that, down in Florida. And she is just like on a mission. She hasn't taken a rest day in 2 years. She is one of those like, I don't take rest days, I just crush kind of people. I think following her is going to be absolutely fantastic. Now, I just spoke very quickly about a lot of people. That is for sure. Stephanie, I'm going to kick it to you. I know that you are really excited about all these people, but specifically Danny Moreno, everything that all of your connections to her and through the trail and all of that. So how can you just give us some insight into this one?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So, you know, Danny Moreno, she had an incredible breakout year this past year in 2022. Granted, she has stacked, you know, solid performances on the trails and at an international level since 2018. But for those listeners who might not be as familiar with Danny, she was third at OCC this past summer. OCC is the 55K distance that's part of the UTMB series. that takes place over in Chamonix. Also for your listeners, this is not just like your run-of-the-mill 50K. OCC is a 55K with like 11,000 feet of vertical gain. Dani was the first American woman to ever podium at OCC, that specific distance. So she was third overall. She has an incredible kick. I think that's what really stands out to me. When it comes to the way Dani races, she put up an awesome Instagram post talking through the place that she would start at for the first half of, the big races that she raced this year. I think at the halfway point at OCC, she was 11th and she kind of let the field run away from her. She said she was very much aware that she was like top 15, but was like right around like 11 to 15. Wow. And then in the second half of that race, she like just put the hammer down in order to make it onto that podium in third. So
against impressive. Against the world's best in a shorter world's ultra, best. Which is an insane thing to do.
Yeah. That's amazing. And she has typically been a sub ultra distance mountain athlete. So, you know, stepping up to OCC being 55K distance was really, really cool to see. She was also third at Mont Blanc Marathon. For your listeners, that is, 42K, but it does run around Mont Blanc and it has 8,000 feet of vertical gain. I can't quote her time there. It's kind of, the time for these is kind of irrelevant. She was also third at Mont Blanc. And she had mentioned, I think she was running in, she was definitely like top 10 at the beginning and then ran her way to third, in the second half. Of note also, she was also fifth overall in the Golden Trail World Series in 2021. Damn. I mean, that is just, for any of your listeners not super familiar with, the rankings, like when it comes to sub-ultra distance mountain athletes, Golden Trail World Series is hands down, like the, in my opinion, the best kind of like ranking litmus test, the most kind of accurate and the most competitive athletes. So she was,
I just want to highlight that too. Like just the athletic part of this, like the athletic prowess of these people, both the men and women in the Golden Trail World Series, is absolutely phenomenal.
It's insane.
I would say some of the best YouTube watching out there is what the Golden Trail World Series has put out. It's ESPN level quality after each one of these races. It's 20 minutes and it's absolutely phenomenal. And you get this sense of like these people are just absolute physical freaks and the stuff that they're able to do, and it's just phenomenal. I'm in slack jawed every time I watch these races.
And the intensity, I'm aware of everything you're describing, really seems like it'll translate from that sort of heart rate level of just hammering so hard, because I think the longer distances, obviously the real ultras, you way beyond 60K, you can't really hum along at that heart rate or else you just crash. So it's making more sense to me the more I learn about her that she would, maybe thrive in that half marathon zone, because it sounds like she's just a crusher in that regard.
Yeah. I think the other thing I noted, she did hop into a road 5K in 2022, I believe, over the summer. I saw video footage of her just cruising in like 1620, I think, 1624 or so. It honestly looked like a walk in the park for her. I don't want to like put words into her mouth, but it looked, she did say that was a PR for her. She hadn't really been doing, hopping into like road and track stuff this past year. So yeah, I'm very, very excited for her to make her marathon road debut. I think she's verbalized too that she is more like utilizing it, not to put words in her mouth, but utilizing it like, as a jumping stone to the summer build for fitness and whatnot. But still really exciting to see.
Yeah, that's exciting. New faces but already accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to highlight Dani here because she's in this unique spot of like an unbelievably accomplished runner, but also new to this endeavor,
which is not
a combination you see very often. That is for sure. Like just like looking at, like if you look at her personal best on like her own website, it's like, again, it's so funny because so many of these don't pertain, right? Just like we said, Carmen Graves, like half marathon time. But even then you're like, all right, so she ran, let's see here, like a 34:17 10K on the track. It's like, also, like, when was the last time Dani Moreno like ran a 10K on the track? But obviously when she did, like, she was like very quick at the same time. And it's just so interesting to see some of this and how it lingers, especially for someone who's doing again, all these trail races, again, this is sub ultra. So you're talking about someone who still needs to bring absolute speed, who's going to be, whose heart rate is going to be like through the roof on these amazing climbs that they're running, right? They're not like power hiking these climbs and like when they're in Zagama, like they are absolutely throwing it uphill, you know, and things like that, which is so interesting. And seeing like Peter, how you said, how like that sort of heart rate management is going to you know, translate to this, because you're just thinking about overall time on feet. Some of these races aren't going to be a whole lot different than some of our marathon experiences, even though they're sub-ultra. Like, again, being on your feet for 2 hours and 30 minutes isn't going to be, like, you know, any different for her just in terms of some of the racing she's done recently.
Yeah. That'll be exciting.
All right. So I know that was, again, these... We're not going to say favorites here, but I know that you were really excited to talk about Danny stuff. Peter, I'm going to go to you now. Is there someone that you saw the list and we were talking back and forth as I was trying to get the roster going? Stephanie, you too. Is there a certain person that you are really excited to follow along over the next year?
This is rare, but CJ never disappoints me. Like, and I don't, maybe I'm just setting him up to disappoint because who can live up to that? But like, the man just goes out and crushes all the time. I was thinking about a good analogy, and it's almost like the guy, if you're in the backyard playing cornhole and the friend who's like, well, check this out. And the one who can just chuck it way, way into the sky and then it comes arcing down and drops straight through the hole. And you're like, wow. I mean, that was still only worth 3 points, but damn, what did you like? You're like, you got to see this guy throw. And then, you know, maybe his friend is the one who just like gets him onto the board, a few slide in. And maybe his friend wins. But you're like, you got to see my friend, this other guy who throws it way high in the sky. I had the pleasure of riding out to the Grandma's Marathon start this June with CJ. Like, it was a little bit of like, I was already on the bus and he walks on and I'm like, hey, I got some spot. I'd love to pass the time picking your brain. I have, just as the storyteller and fan in me, I am a much bigger fan of the people who throw it out there, who are leading the Boston Marathon, who are taking a chance on a dream to break away and have that day. I have deep respect and admiration for the people who, you know, run smooth splits and finish up high up. But, you know, I'm the first one to defend the athletes who like take shots and go for things. So I've been a big fan of all of his endeavors and, I feel like back when Twitter, running Twitter was more thriving, I would end up just like screenshotting some of his Strava stuff and putting it on there. And it would just go nuts. Like people would retweet it because they're just like, what is this? Most of the time when we text around things he does on Strava, the reply is like, wait, what? Like, but whether it's the day he ran CIM or it's the next day when he runs like 5 or 6 miles at 5:30 pace around like downtown Sacramento, and you're like, why? Like, why? But you can't look away. So, Sidious Mag has done some interviews with him and some video stuff where you're like, wait a second, really? Like, he's just a dude, you know? He's a coach, and he's trying things, and I'm excited to hear what plans he might reveal to you. He was talking to me about his approach to different, finding different races to both maximize his Brooks contract, but also chase other dreams. So like, I was just like,
yeah, he's been open and honest about that too. He's been like, I remember, I think, was it Finn Melanson who asked him? Might've been someone else who asked him about like going for the 50K world championship world record. And he's like, how does that play into, you know, your strategy as a professional runner? He's like, oh, I got a really good bonus from it from my sponsor, and I felt like I really should go after that, so I'm going to go do it. And he's like, I was training for a marathon at the time. I was like, yeah, I'm probably in pretty good shape for that. And he goes, wasn't tapered or anything. I was just like, oh, I'll just give it a try, and I went and did it. And it's like
a casual 2:38, 50K.
There are like 10 things in that sentence I want to dissect, right? And it's like, exactly. That's just CJ. And you're like, this is amazing. I remember I had him on the Railing Runner after he broke the indoor marathon world record at the Armory. So it wasn't just like that he did it indoors. He did it on a 200-meter track, and he ran 2:17 on a 200-meter banked track. It's like, oh my God, this is insane. And remember, I don't know if it was my interview or someone else's, I've consumed so many CJ Albertson interviews at this point, who's to say, but he was basically, I don't know if I'm paraphrasing here or quoting him exactly, but I think one of my favorite lines from him was like, hey, I didn't run Foot Locker. I wasn't the guy that was destined to do any of this. So I'm not going to do everything that everyone else is doing who was destined to do this. Like, if I do all the stuff that they're going to do, then they're going to win. I wasn't one of those guys. So I'm not going to train like them, because if I do, what the heck is the point? Like, I was an outsider. I'm going to continue to be an outsider, and I'm going to embrace it for all it's worth. And I hope he continues to do that, not only because it's super interesting, I love following it, but it's going to be fun to talk through it as well.
Yeah, I don't want to only go to the guy crusher that I'm excited for. I'm excited for Nell to, you know, have a journey this year and see where I find Nell, just to be honest, I find her intimidating. I find her to be like pretty badass and pretty hardcore and pretty like, shut up, no bullshit. Like talking about what she's going to do and attempting to do it. And like her back-to-back Bostons are, you know, they speak for themselves. So it'll be interesting. I think I'm the first to say that I'm disappointed they picked a totally pancake flat Florida course. There's all the drama around how it ended up that I would have liked to see a little bit more rolling hills that might have given some of these athletes like more to work with, more to mess with each other as competitors. So it'll be, I guess that translates then to, you know, the Fobbles and the Nels of the world. Like what surges might they end up throwing in next February? What things might they try?
Yeah, that's right. Because how do you, and then we'll talk about this many times going to that race, but you know, with these kinds of races, there are no rabbits. Who takes the lead? Who's going to go out there and set the pace? And does CG Albertson go, you know, from plucky darling to like, actually, you're one of the favorites now. Are you still going to race like that as a favorite? Yeah. Or was that like, hey, I have nothing to lose. Let's go set the road on fire. And like, that's great. But like, are you going to run that way if you're the favorite? Right? Or are you going to be like, we just looking back at like the last marathon trials where Galen Rupp was like, I'll just stay back here with the group. I'm calm. I'm content. When I need to make my move, I'll make my move. I'm fine.
The thing we know about Galen is that he will find someone to sit on. He will piss that person off.
Yeah.
He will eventually. I mean, I love Galen. It's a whole different thing. I'm like, hey, you got something that works. The most badass thing I ever heard him say was, when he ran a half marathon during the pandemic, he said, to be clear, I'm taking COVID really seriously. I haven't run with anyone since mile 17 of the trials. And I was like, oh, that was
burn.
Burn. You mean when I took off. So these guys, I'm hopeful that we get to hear, like, again, like I wouldn't expect it would be on you to get something out of them. Like this time next year when they're really like, you know, leading up in those last 3 months, it can be like, how is it? Well, I'm training really hard, but I mean, I'll be curious to see what things they're willing to talk about. They're trying and skills they're working on in the next 6 months.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And I'm expecting them to be pretty cagey, as anyone would expect, right? You wouldn't be like someone completely telegraphing a move. Like, well, let me tell you what's going to happen at mile 12.7. Let me just tell you, Matt Chittum, and hopefully no one listens. It will definitely be interesting. But at the same time, like it's you looking back on it, like you never, as interesting as the first season was, there was only so much you could take, like heading into it, right? Like the betting, like taking people back to pre-Atlanta, like just looking at the men's field, it was like, all right, it's Galen is the clear favorite. Jared Ward is the clear number two. And basically every prognostication was like, who's going to be third? And like, you can go back and look at all like the Sidious Mag and Let's Run. And they have all like the polls, which was like interesting. Like it was like their reader polls, not like their expert polls. And it was always like Galen Rupp, Jared Ward. And then like 12 different people listed as like the third person. Right. And on the women's side, it was definitely like it was a little bit more condensed in terms of like, there were definitely favorites, but it was much more like, it could be any of these like six people kind of feel. But even then, like Molly Seidel was rarely put in the top six there. And then Alaphine, it was kind of like, no one really knew because she was coming off of an injury. And the people who lived in Flagstaff were like, she's crushing. She's crushing. But people weren't exactly sure because she was in August, she was in Africa. Then she was coming back off of an injury. And then she like had a quick little buildup and then she went and smashed. So even then, like it was like, what do we expect from Alaphine? And then looking back on it, like Kellen had a stress fracture we didn't know about, like in the you know, leading into it. So it's like, you look back on it, you're like, oh my God, like, that's right. Like, it seems almost like preordained after the fact when you're like, oh, Molly Seidel, that was a great story. And she goes to try, and she goes to the Olympics and runs well. But like, you forget, like, leading in, like, how many people had her penciled in to be on the podium? Like, not many.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan of the fact that they lowered the half marathon times. When I wrote that article about reimagining the trials a couple years ago, and we even discussed like getting rid of the half marathon qualifier because we were like, come on, like run a marathon. If you want to run the event, run the event. But I think it adds, particularly with the lower time, it adds like essentially if those people are in the pack, the other athletes are like, ooh, God, we don't want them to be around for very long because they're quite quick. So seeing more of these women go to Houston and run 1:11, you know, low and high, and you go, wow, okay, that'll be interesting. It'll be exciting to see them on the course.
Right. I mean, Steph, let's talk about this for a second. Like, you think about, all right, so 1:12 is the half marathon time for the women, which we're going to focus on right now because that's the one that Carmen Graves is going to shoot for. Yeah. Like, that is an extremely robust half marathon time.
Oh,
You know, if you look at some of these running calculators out there, again, none of them are perfect, but that basically, almost all of them say that that is the rough equivalent of a 2:30 marathon. So that is like, again, that's the real deal. So when you see someone saying, all right, I've never run this distance before, but I'm going to go for the half. What's your take on that? Because I think this is going to be a fascinating thing to watch.
Yeah, well, actually, what I was just thinking of when you guys brought up Molly was like, I think that's what that's what everyone was saying, you know, about Molly heading in. It's like, oh, well, you know, the trials is her first, you know, crack at the distance. It's like, yeah, but I think like what we all, not like what we forget, but I think like what maybe the general public forgets is like, of course they're training for it. I mean, of course they're like putting in the long runs. Of course they're going. Like I think Sarah Hall had mentioned like she was on that streak for a while in her training where like she was literally running like 26.2, like 27 miles every weekend, like leading into like Chicago. I'm pretty sure she mentioned that. You know, not to say that like someone like Carmen or like anyone else, any other women who are, or men that are just going for the half marathon standard are training in that way. But I mean, I don't know. I think it is interesting and a fun, like, wild card to have where it's like, yeah, like Peter mentioned, like, you know, these people running, like getting the half marathon standard have a lot of leg speed in them. Yeah, and it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see their kind of training, like building up their mileage and things like that heading in.
Yeah, when you see some, obviously, if you know, looking at Carmen, who's spent a lot of time at the 3K and the 5K, obviously those are still, while you know, you're redlining for a large portion of time, that is mostly an aerobic-driven event, with that being said. So when you see someone who focuses on that, again, not knowing her training in particular, but like, is it a could it be a drastic change going to more half marathon, marathon focus? Or is there a way that that could be pretty seamlessly done without being a complete revolution in terms of training protocol?
I think that's a great question to ask Sarah Vaughn, honestly.
I know, right?
Our middle distance, you know, I mean, everyone was like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, she's making the breakaway, you know, from the 1500, like 3K, like into the marathon. And I guess for me, like, at, like, you know, objectively, I'm like, she's had four kids, like, I don't think the marathon, like, it, like, I think she's got it. You know, that's kind of where my mind went with that. But I think that would be a great conversation to have with Sarah about her transition and what that was like, you know, building up the mileage and things like that.
So I actually asked Sarah that question prior to CIM as part of the live show in Sacramento. And she was just kind of like, obviously it's a change, but for the truth be told, I was always a high mileage runner. So it really was, in terms of like overall mileage, she's like, it didn't really, my overall mileage didn't change, was her point. She's my long runs lengthened and the kind of work I was doing within my long runs changed for sure. She goes, but like, I was already putting in like 2 hour long runs on the weekend. Like I was already putting in 80 to 85 miles a week.
Right.
Like this wasn't a drastic change for her. It was more just like, okay, how often am I going to be like hitting my VO2 max and workouts versus going more threshold pace and hitting more marathon effort and some of my other things. But for her, she was just kind of like, not Much Ado About Nothing kind of vibes, but that was, it was kind of in that range in terms of like, this is just kind of what I've been doing for a long time. And like, this training is not a whole lot different than other training. And she lives like in like Running Center USA, like, or one of them living in Boulder. So like, she's living around like the best marathoners in the world, or some of them at least, all year round. So like, for her, again, it wasn't that different. And Carmen is now moved to Colorado.
Yeah, so, I was just going
to
say.
So she's going to be trying to do the same sort of thing.
Yeah. She'll benefit from
that. Yeah, you ask them. Like, you essentially ask them how they like the long run, you know, and what how the long run stacks up relative to the other days of the training of the week. And, you know, I have friends who I train with and they're like, oh, the long run, fine. And then I have others who are like, oh, here we go. You know, it's my favorite day of the week. And so it's those, even if they haven't raced a marathon, that play to it well.
Yeah, it would be interesting. And it would be interesting to see how the calendar breaks out over the next 12 months, right? Because I mentioned before, last year, Houston was like, was the end, right? That was the last race in the window heading into heading into Atlanta. This year, unless like a new race pops up, it's going to be CIM. Right?
Well,
which is going to make the CIM make the CIM finish line even crazier than it was in, in 2019, which will be wild.
There is no, that'll be the last weekend that's in the window. So there's
right. You're right. It wasn't. Yeah, there isn't.
There's no time if you wind back the calendar. So yeah, I think CIM is going to be bonkers and that'll be exciting.
Excited for that.
We'll
definitely
be there. We'll be there for that for sure.
I'm curious about for the, it's early enough in February that I think it's going to get a little wonky for the real top tier athletes who want to get the payday in New York. Because it starts to be like November, December, January is really your 3 month buildup. I mean, some of these people also with super shoes can do amazing things. But I think even New York, with how early it is, you'd be hard pressed to say it's perfect to race on like November, whatever, or third, early November, and then say. So it'll be interesting how that plays in for the people who have a shot at, you know, really looking to qualify.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if like the Chicago field will be a bit more stacked this year because of that. It'll be interesting.
Are there other marathons that you think as well that might garner some of these, like especially pros, right? So no, not pros, but someone who's thinking that they have a legitimate chance to podium, or someone who's like, maybe I'm not there, but maybe I want the trials to be my PR race. Like, I want to go there and I want to show out, right? So those people probably are not going to be running CIM, for instance, right? So like, CIM has now like had people run sub 230 the past few years. Like, you would assume anyone who's going to run sub 230 at CIM is probably not going to be running CIM.
Right, 2023.
We mentioned New York. That could be a tough one, but at the same time, it's also a big payday, so that could be it could be tough. Especially if just a couple people turn it down, then all of a sudden, someone who maybe didn't expect to get a payday is going to be in line for one. Maybe that could help. Are there other races that could maybe see a boom because of the timing here? Like, and you mentioned Chicago is potentially one of them, but maybe it's not even a world marathon major. I don't know.
Oh, really? Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. I think some of the pros will probably end up in Berlin because it's like, you know, you could still have the time to cycle down and then really get after it. But yeah, I don't know. Some of those top tier athletes like don't even need to actually race that much in that that 6 months leading up to it. You know, it's like we love to see them race and stack that calendar. But you're like, it's not that they have to prove it to themselves when it really comes down to it.
Well, that's a good question, right? Because is there something to be said, or is there certain spots in people's careers where racing that marathon in the 4 to 5 months leading out is a benefit versus are there certain running makeups or like experiences that lends themselves to being like, you know what, I could probably just race a few halves here, or I could focus on, you know, like the New Haven 20K or some things like that, that maybe alters the play here for certain people. Comparing, I'm trying to think here, like maybe like a newer pro versus a more experienced pro. Like, so I'm not even going to choose people on the roster right now, but say someone who's like a Connor Mance versus a Scott Faubel, right? Like, it's maybe who have, you know, who are going to be legitimate favorites to be on the podium, but whose running experiences are wildly different considering how similar their careers are. Maybe both of them have very different takes on like what that recovery might mean or bouncing back might mean from a fall marathon versus the other one.
Yeah, I don't, there's all these races that are, in that middle zone, you know, there's a 20K, a half marathon, 25K. You're like, you know, people are like, I've never run a 20K. And you're like, well, you've run a half marathon. They're like, it just sucks like a little less, but it's basically the same.
For anyone who's listening to this right now, a marathon is 42K. So obviously a half marathon is 21K. So it's only 1K. Only 1K difference.
Yeah. So, you know, 20K versus 21K, 21.1. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, I think that's where you start to get into how the running world, pro running is actually a whole bunch of different things all smish-mashed together. I was just, as we head into the track season, I was hearing on podcasts and reading about how with like the track and marathon worlds are sort of diverging because the track is getting the time standards and yada yada are, I don't want to bore anyone, but they're getting so fast because they're trying to create a whole point system that it's going to be, we traditionally would have, you know, some of our best runners in the last two decades would go to the marathon trials, and if they didn't make it, then they would recover and gear up for the track. And that's less and less, it's still possible if you're like just a really great athlete, but it's some of the best track athletes are having to really, really focus to give themselves the peace of mind that they hit the times, and they're working back like a year and a half from the trials. So you start to be like, oh wow, we might not get as many people running the marathon trials if they don't think they have a really good shot because the two worlds are a little bit further apart than they used to be. That's really far inside baseball, but it's
It's important. Think about the 2020 trials, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about one of the favorites in that race, and she will be one of the, if not the top favorite in 2024, was Emily Sisson, right? And she never explicitly said after the fact, but I think if you read between the lines in the interviews she did, it was like, this race wasn't going well. I could tell that I wasn't going to be top three, and I had an eye towards the 10K for the track trials. Again, the track trials ended up getting postponed a year because of COVID, but that was the thing. That was actually it seemed as though, again, I don't want to take words out of her mouth, especially if they're incorrect, but that was the sense of the interviews after the fact. The fact that there was like, she was actually considering plan B while she was still in the offing for plan A.
I love how professional both of you are. You're like, I don't want to put words in there. Her and Molly Huddle, two training partners, both dropped out of the race when they were having that race. And I'm like, how much money would I put on that their coach said, if it's not going well, we got a 10K, you
double
need to qualify.
For the 10K,
back. And they're both such stud runners that you're like, they could do that. I hope that's still possible, but
those would be the two athletes that, like Peter just mentioned, have like the range, like in order to do that. Like Emily Sisson immediately, obviously, came to mind.
For sure. There are some, it's going to be exciting because you start to get like, my brain, like, when it focuses, when you mention someone, I'm like, oh, she's definitely a favorite. And then I'm like, oh, wow, I'm forgetting about these three other people. So, you know, it'll be exciting.
And we're going to see a lot of these people in Boston. That is for sure. Yeah. So, like, the track trials. I'm sorry, the trials. There you go. So, I'm talking about track. I'm, like, mixing up my words. The marathon trials are a year away. But we're going to see a preview in Boston for almost all the athletes who we're going to be following here. I should say, everyone's probably looking up all of these runners, and I hope you do. You know, shout out to Nico Montañez, who did. You'll see a 219 at Boston. You'd be like, wow. He ran a 209 in Chicago. How do you run a 219 Boston? He got a root canal 2 days before that race. I just want to throw it out there. If you're going to put an asterisk on a race, he did have a root canal 2 days before that race. So just as people are doing their little internet research, I'm like, hey, I want to learn more about these runners. Please do. But also, shout out to Nico. Incredibly tough, incredibly fast, living out in Mammoth Lakes and training in the snow right now. You know, he's also kind of obviously super tough to go run that race after that experience.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy I've heard him mention when he ran a sub 210, he got a lot of shout outs from other athletes, which indicated to me that they've known he was quite good. They were waiting for something like that to happen. And he's the kind of guy, if he's in the pack on the day at the trials, everyone's going to be like, we don't want this guy around for very late. Like, we got to make moves to get away from him. So he'll definitely be exciting to see what his buildup is like.
Yeah, I mean, he showed it at the 15K. He then did it in the half marathon, and now he's done it at the marathon. So he might not be, to maybe some of our more amateur running followers, a name that immediately comes to mind for some of this stuff. But when you look at his bio and what he's been able to do with the last couple of years, he's absolutely in the group of top people who could really make moves on that day. And, you know, hey, and he's also done well in Florida, right? Gate River is in Florida.
Yeah. I also, good point. I have to remind, so Jake Riley finishing second, a couple of years ago, I like to say, like, he sort of ruined a whole nother generation of men's, aspirations for the marathon, because we had like a whole series of trials where the top three were really like, you know, you had Abdi, you had Galen, you have Meb, and you start to go, okay, qualifying is probably, so back in my day, like back in 2007, Brian Sell qualified, and it just like opened up this whole window for so many men who were like, I could be Brian Sell. No one had ever heard of Brian Sell. And so I feel like you fast forward 13 years and suddenly you have Jake Riley, and I was like, I don't know if I could be Abdi. I'm not sure if I could be Galen, but I could be Jake Riley. And so there's a lot of names that you go, are they a sure thing? No, but could they be Jake Riley? Yeah, they could definitely, maybe.
Right. And on the women's side, for that race, it wasn't Molly Seidel, even though every single headline in major newspapers like mistold the story every time. It's like, barista qualifies for the race.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I know.
Like, she was the best runner in like her age group for like 10 straight years. Like,
yeah.
Like, she was like as good as anybody. But but Julia Conan, who then became Julia Giffey, getting top 10, that was like, wait, what? Like, obviously people who knew the sport knew, but like, again, college soccer player, was in St. Louis, was not this big household name. All of a sudden she's like, and again, she stands out. Like, she was taller than like almost all the other women in the pack. It was like, wait, who's that? Right? If you didn't know. And all of a sudden here she is, top 10, gets a NASLE contract out of it. And it was like, wow, like, what an exciting turn of events. Again, not second like Jake Riley, who had his own unique story, but it was one of those like, oh, wow, like, if she can do it, college soccer player, only does one year of college running, like, what about me? What can I possibly do? And obviously she is a genetic freak and an unbelievable runner, but I think it does, like, again, it kind of gives you that little tidbit of like, what if, and that people can really take that and literally and figuratively run with it.
That'll make it exciting for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Stephanie, before we get going, anything you want to say before we skedaddle? I feel like Peter and I have kind of monopolized the mic
minutes. You guys are fine. I just want to give a shout out to my friend Curly. I'm very excited to see his build and his lead up in. Recently turned 40, new masters athlete. I know he ran 109 at a half in November in 2022. He had mentioned to me that, like, you know, he was not in like OTQ shape quite yet, but he was like building back. You know, Peter, you raced CIM in last month. But yeah, it's still last month. It's not February. I think Curly ran right around 2:26, and he had mentioned like great place to jump off from. Excited to work on his fitness from there. I'm really looking forward to his journey and following along. Like Matt mentioned, soon to be a dad of three, wonderful wife Melissa. Just a really, really cool story. Of note, also, I know we also mentioned he's a DJ, but he just recently shared that he like is booked like every single weekend through like June or something like that. Like, DJing, which I think
does that
is,
count as a double?
I mean, it's time on feet. It's loud. I think that's incredible.
That's awesome.
And just kind of like fitting that in throughout his training and everything like that. I'm excited to see his build.
Yeah, he fires me up. I'm excited.
Does he wear rabbit to the club? What's the outfit?
I don't know.
Does he go the Galen Rupp cut singlet? What are the options?
Oh dear.
I will say, Curly, I mean, what an awesome guy that is for sure. And not only that, obviously he's the best guy, but in addition to that, he's actually leading a group down in SoCal of like younger, younger runners, like young 20s, mid 20s, who are like, hey, I want to qualify for the trials. So he is leading this like, you know, this casual group of like, hey, let's kind of work this together. He's not their formal coach or anything, but like really kind of like providing guidance for
mentorship,
them as they try to, you know, proceed down this. And this is going to be really exciting. So I remember I was talking to him about like, hey, are you going to go for it again? Like, I know you did in 2020. Are you going to go for it in 2024? Because if you are, like, we'd love to have you on the show. He's like, man, I'm all in 100%. He's like, don't worry about CIM. Don't worry about that. I'm all in. He goes, I'm leading this group. We're all going for it. And I just can't wait to listen to that as well.
It's insane. Like, he tells me, like, he's like, you know, these guys are like half my age. Some of them are like 19. You know, he just turned 40. I mean, it's crazy. And he's like, they call me dad. But then anyone that, you know, I highly recommend anyone like hop on Strava and follow Curly. He shares his workouts like on social media as well. I mean, there's so... Everyone talks about that, right? Like training with, you know, putting yourself with others, you know, who are faster than you, but, you know, maybe better than you, and just seeing how much you can get out of yourself by doing that. And like, perfect example right there with Curly. He was just sharing his like, you know, 449 mile like repeats, like, you know, like Matt said, with his younger training group. And I just think that's really, really cool. A really neat dynamic they have down there.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just say, again, we're going to be doing full intro episodes with everybody over the first 4 weeks of Road to the Trials. So go on to Road to the Trials and subscribe if you haven't already done so. Also, as I'm looking up the episode that Jeremy was on, so I can provide that for you for Unrambling Runner, I will say that used to be Road to the Olympic Trials, and until Peter, correctly, before season two, was like, hey, quick question, are you sure that you're allowed to use the word Olympic in your title? I'm like, no, I am not, and I am changing the name today, because I don't want to get sued. Like, I might know a lot of lawyers, but they employ a lot of lawyers. So there we go. So obviously, we're going to do another podcast with Jeremy Rivera very soon, but she was on Rambling Runner episode 276. Cool. So that was October 11th, 2020. She was already doing amazing things back then, to put it in perspective. She had just like, you know, she was on a mission back then, but it seems like every year she just continues to like, you know, more and just igniting the fire. And like back then, like it was amazing, because like she just come on the show and she had just set her 5k PR of 1907, and it was like, yes, I did it. Like, that was a big thing. And then you look at her now, it's like she's trying to go to the Olympic trials. Like, it is going to be a fun journey to follow her. Please join us on the Road to the Trials feed. We're going to be coming to you about 6 times a month. That's the plan, right? Wow. So it's going to be one or two times a week is going to be the plan. Obviously, that will change depending on what's going on. We're on Boston. It'll probably be a little bit more. If it's a down month, maybe a little bit less. So unlike Rambling Runner, where it's every Monday and every Friday, it will be a little bit less systematic on Road to the Trials. But when there's stuff going on, we will be bringing it to you. No question about that. Stephanie and Peter, thank you so much for joining me on this announcement and preview episode.
Yeah. So excited.
Thanks for having us.
I said this would be 20 minutes. We went 62 minutes, but I appreciate it. So if you're planning to qualify for the men's Olympic trials in the half marathon, all you have to do is beat us to the end of this episode and you will have qualified.
You have already finished. Wow.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening, and happy running.
Thank you.